Welcome to Anne Double D, your go-to podcast for candid conversations. Dive deep with us into the heart of life's challenges, business hurdles, and the journey to better ourselves. Join us in exploring the art of living intentionally, finding balance, and enhancing not just your life, but your business and leadership skills. It's time to grow, to inspire, and to lead Anne Double D. Conversations that transform. Welcome to Double D Do's Business, or Anne Double D, Debbie.
Do's.
I'm Dave Evans.
And I'm Debbie Halls Evans.
Yeah, a bunch of doozies. That's not the greatest of starts, but...
Let's go.
Over to you.
Brilliant. So I am just going to do a really quick update, Dave, on why we're even doing this podcast.
I'd like to know.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. So we are in season five, and we are reflecting back on your book, Leadership or Leadership.
Yep.
And I just wanted to let people know how different this book is. So very, very quickly, there is a speed read section. So if you're very your style, who loves a bit of Blinkist, and there's lots of other apps you can use as well, but you can speed read the book in 15 pages. We also use the methodology of smart brevity, so why, what, why.
Yeah.
Really powerful, much more concise. We also give, and you give so many techniques and tools and all the things that you've created in our Go Deeper section. And we also get people to start to apply this, so the self-coaching element. So ACT, what am I going to apply, change, teach or transform? Just wanted to get that out there.
Appreciate that, Debbie. I love your tone too. It's quite funny.
Thanks. So, is all about chapter.
Yeah.
Dave's just choking. You can tell that we don't actually edit this. This is all live as it goes. So, this chapter, and I probably say this every time, but it is one of my favourites, is selfish or selfless. And I think in leadership and leadership, this is a really great one. So, in your book, what you do in this particular chapter is you are really clear with some tangible actions.
Yep.
But you start to define what selfish leadership actually is in an individual basis around self-leadership. So talk to me about it.
Well, which side, selfish or selfless?
Well, I'd like you to explore both.
Selfish is an invitation to a leader today to perhaps consider something new.
Are you doing it now?
Right, it's to do something new. Anyone listening, Debbie likes to breathe in her drinks, so she's currently doing that live on air. The new invitation is this, right? Is you don't have to burn out, right? And selfish is taking care of your own resources. It's not taking care of your agenda.
Yes.
It's not taking care of your drive or the things that you want. It's about being selfish with your well-being. And not selfish in a way where you go, I'm not doing that because.
Yeah.
It's about realizing or recognizing moments when you need to rest, recognizing when you need to go further, recognizing when you need to do things when people around you are saying, no, don't go there, and they don't like it. That's being selfish. Get ready to do that.
So there's something around the selflessness. We surrender, like you said, burn ourselves out. We sit in a place of stress or anxiety, mostly fear, I would say, selfless comes from. Whereas selfishness is actually getting yourself to be at that best point.
Yeah.
So that you can help other people. So I think you define it in the book as lead others, you know, but you've got to lead yourself first.
Well,
self-leadership.
I think in this century, leading yourself has become more important than ever before because it's expected of you. Right? It's not something that you get a choice in.
From a generational perspective? Or...
Just from a doing business perspective.
Okay.
I don't know many companies who don't, and many people in companies who don't talk about their people and talk about, genuinely, what their conduct is like and how they deal with themselves. Think of all of our clients around the world. It comes up all the time. So there's this expectation of people that you employ that the person doesn't always know about. So if that person doesn't know self-leadership is a thing, they're only ever going to disappoint you. So you've got to own it yourself.
It's a bit of gold there, Dave.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realise.
Gold.
Yeah, but it's true, isn't it? So,
yeah.
So rather than say you shouldn't have expectations of people, which has been around for centuries, flip it on its head. Teach people that self-leadership, how you look after yourself, how you build your skills, how you bring those things together, is an expectation in the workplace. It is part of working here.
But why do you think...
And then flip it to how can I help you?
But why do you think we've got to this point where we have to be really clear about, you know, selflessness is not going to benefit anybody? how have we got to that point? Because I think that's really important, right? Understanding why we've got that, you know, people are literally putting their family lives
second,
or their ability just to be a better person second.
But I think you also have to remember the origins of selflessness, right? So it can be misleading. Mm-hmm. Selflessness is not what you're giving up or how you're sacrificing. Selflessness is traditionally servanthood. Servanthood in the traditional sense of, as a leader, how do I take care of the people I lead?
But do you not think we've got to that point where we are literally just, and I think this is what the whole book for me stems from, Leadership or Leadership, is that there is millions of models out there and we pick one that we like and then it becomes mainstream, whatever that really means, and everybody sits in that and then they lose this point of actually this is the reason why you set up a business, the reason why you want to work with people, the reason why you go to work. You know, you then get sucked into this vortex of, well, I've got to be selfless, I've got to throw everything into it and ignore everything else in my life. But what you're saying is turn that on its head and start to look at it completely different.
Give it a reset.
Yeah.
Realize that both need to have their space in the picture. You know, the book captures for me the consideration that any one of the chapter headers, selfish or selflessness, authentic or fake, right? Every single word that exists can have a negative or a positive connotation or meaning, right? The decision is yours. What we're talking about today specifically is being selfish so that you don't burn out.
Yeah.
Right? And actually, as if you're a company owner listening to this, how do you stop that being a feature? Now, let's be really clear. I've also seen loads of people in business over the last 20 years thinking about helping people not burn out means don't over-ask, don't ask too much of them. No, the job still needs to get done.
Yep. Yep.
It's not about less work or less time at work, right? There's a truth in business that you're the owner, you think that the owner, you go to bed at night with the responsibilities of being the owner, all of the risks and stuff that go with that, right? You also get the rewards that go with that when it goes well, right? Because you carry both cans.
Yes.
You can't apply that to someone who works for you.
Now this, genuinely, if I could like have a klaxon or something going on, if I did edit this way.
Yeah.
But to me, this is really important. This is something that we coach regularly. But as an owner, having the same expectation of what you want, you know, doing X amount of hours,
yeah,
and then projecting that onto your employees is of no benefit to anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're not the owner.
I'll give you an example, right? Let's say you're working in a company and somebody works for you and they've got a contract of working hours in a week that's 40 hours.
Yep.
Simple maths, right? Let's say the work they have to do is, we'll call it production, general language.
Okay.
There's a certain amount of stuff they have to do in that 40 hours. If the person doing that is happy in all of these following scenarios, A, they do it in 30 hours.
Yep.
The question you've got to ask yourself as an owner or a leader is, do you care? If the job is competently done in 30 hours and they're paid for 40, do you care? You also get to ask the same question in scenario B, which is, what if they're taking 43 hours and you're not paying overtime, they're taking a little bit longer and they're not bothered? What if they're doing it in 55 hours? Same symptoms. I would hope in 55 hours that the leader would say, how do I help this person?
Yeah.
Right? But if the person's happy, right, doing the 55 hours, producing competent work, granted, not as efficient as they could be, we've got to see it for what it is. You can't sit there going, I wish they only worked 30 hours.
Yeah.
Right? It's you're setting yourself up to fail. And that's what getting leadership right is. Selfish is about you making sure that you are taking care and owning your own resources. Because here's the truth. You can't give when you're empty.
Yeah. You can't give
when
you're
empty. And you only are empty when you don't take care of yourself.
And I think this takes me smoothly, Dave, which is pretty good for us, takes us smoothly into neural pathways. And one of the examples you give, which is a really fun one in the book, is about the backward bike.
Yeah.
But I think because we are...
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So because we are so... I think programmed is the wrong word. Surely there's a better word. But so used to being told that, you know, we've got to be at work. We've got to work extra hours. We've got to do all of this other behaviour.
There's a video of the backward bike.
Oh, is there? I'll find it.
Yeah,
find
German
it.
Chap.
Right, okay.
It's actually magnificent.
But the point I'm attempting to share, or question actually, is... this is about unlearning. More specifically, I think there's certain chapters in the book that are very specifically tailored to unlearning. So there's more discomfort, right? Genuine more discomfort. So talk to us maybe about the backward bike and why it's relevant to us allowing ourselves to understand this differently in leadership.
Either way, you can become fixed in what you repeat. It happens to me, right? So, you know, I only learned this week in the recording that I have lots of strengths in my leadership, but one of the things that I do is I conclude, right? Mm-hmm. And actually, if you were to differentiate as a leader, and apologies to the listeners, you know, therapists will talk about owning your shit. Yeah. They might not say it like that, but that's what they mean. And one of the things that I've personally learned after all these years is that I'm really good at owning my feelings. Really good, right? Mistake I make is I conclude. And really, truly owning my feeling in that moment is not taking the conclusion into play. Leave the conclusion. Hasn't happened.
Okay, so just explain what does that mean, though? So you're finishing.
I'm finishing a feeling, yeah. And actually, the feeling doesn't need me to finish it off. There is no outcome.
So give me a very clear example of what that is, if you don't want to...
No, sure. I feel like this, which must mean that.
Yes.
Right? Doesn't matter what it means, right? The actual example will make it worse. But the fact that you just don't stop and go, I feel like this, that's the stop moment. You own the feeling. You don't play the movie out. And for me, that is a micro moment of opportunity. That I didn't even know was there.
So we all sit in that point where, well, it ultimately takes us to assumption, then, doesn't it? And then by being sitting in assumption, we turn into the leadership element of ourself, because we've all got them, right? We're both. That's the point of the blooming book.
The cause of this for me, I can even share that with the listeners, is as a coach and as an author and technically a mindset expert, you train yourself.
Not expert. I know, semantics are important.
It is really important, but let's not...
Get stuck on it, yes.
On a word that changes the story. As a mindset specialist.
Yes.
Right? You train your brain. You know, I was recording a D-log the other day about called the frame. How every time you see a window border, this is something that I do every day. I share this in Hayden's talk coming up. And he asked me a question about this, right? And you'll hear about this in the next episode.
Yeah.
But I turned it into a D-log because when I see a window frame, it is a trigger for my brain to fire out good thoughts for tomorrow of things I want to come to pass. Now, that's brilliant. But what it creates is a conclusion habit. Unintended. All right. And now I've clocked it.
Yeah.
Right? So feelings are energy that come and go, positive or negative, right? Selfish or selfless, right? Let them. Just let them. And don't conclude them. That's a moment of getting leadership better. And that's me, live, right? After all these years, learning something new.
Okay, so I do think...
And not being fixed.
Yeah, not being fixed, which is actually very difficult, right? Because we get stuck. This is the unlearning element,
yes. What you do repetitively, you can become fixed on.
Completely. So let's go back to that unlearning neural pathways, creating them. Very quick synopsis, when we can all change our neural pathways. So literally to the moment we expire off this glorious earth, we have to just remember a neural pathway is a well-worn path. It's a road, it's a motorway, river, whatever you see in your head.
Path through the forest is the easiest.
Yep.
Do you walk the one that everyone else has walked?
Or do you start to create a new one? And your that's own, where the discomfort is, right? So the discomfort comes from, well, it's always going to feel uncomfortable. And the backward bike is about that, isn't it? It's like, there's many things, idioms.
But in the video, the guy shows you, right, that after learning this new way of riding the bike, he goes to go back to the other way.
And it feels as uncomfortable.
Correct.
Yeah. So I think there's a whole thing about when you're thinking about selfish and selfless, is you are going to feel uncomfortable. And that's a hugely positive thing because it means that you are fundamentally doing something different, which is great. All right, so...
Debbie, there is a barrier to this, though.
Oh, go on.
It's guilt.
Oh.
People have guilt. Now, it's not guilt on have you done your job right? Mm-hmm. Are you running your business right? It's that they look at a schedule, a gap in the diary, and they'll see it. It happens to me, right? You go 2.5 hours in the morning, right, are available. I see how much you have to do because you're the tech ops genius, right? So I, and your list is always full. And then I look at that and go, I want to do something for me, right? Which will usually involve habit stacking, cycling, training, listening to books, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's for me. And then I hang around a bit rather than do it because I'm feeling guilty because of what you've got on.
Yeah.
Right? How many people in business feel guilty when there's a gap in their calendar? They go, right. And the mistake they make is they don't block the time.
Yeah.
And it's not about showing what you're using your time for. It's about going, right, I'm committing the diary to the thing I'm going to do to be selfish or even be selfless. You know, I know a lady who's a teacher who will go cycling at work in school to train for Ironmans because that's the time available regardless of what the school says. And there's an agreement between them informally that that's all right. But you just got to do it.
But there's an agreement because that person's better in their role because of doing that. So everybody benefits, right?
So it's but guilt gets in the way.
Yeah, I do see that. That's a really good point. All right, so these are, considering that these are just us chatting, these are people experiencing what actually happens when we do chat.
Yeah.
So let's look at some of the techniques. So we have, I've said so many times, we have all of our techniques, which are our techniques.
Yeah.
You've created, you've built them, I make them into something tangible, that's how it works. So in this, there is a lot in this particular chapter. It's chock-a-block. Now, there is fuel gauges and there's also feedback. And we have a story and I'm going to let you share your story today.
Thank you.
I know, which is very unusual. Which one would you like to focus on? Fuel gauges or feedback?
Okay, it's hard, right?
Brilliant. Yeah, okay, so there's...
Let's not pretend.
No.
You know, people go around, you know the cliche? I bet anyone listening can go, yeah, feedback is a...
gift.
That's horseshit, right? That's an American phrase. Yes. I thought of Brian Smith when I said that.
Yeah.
I don't even know why. Sorry, Brian. Brian would never say that.
Right, okay.
But it's nonsense. Nobody likes it. And you might be doing positive self-talk, but let's be really candid, ironically. Who's sitting there real-time going, let's have some feedback? Right.
Well, I know, but then is that not that whole thing of we've then created it into something else? Feedback becomes this review process.
It's muddy.
It becomes, ultimately, you just think you're going to get told off and somebody's going to tell you that you're absolutely crap. That is ultimately where people go first.
Yep.
So you've created there's three elements in the book.
Yep.
Of feedback.
Yep.
Which...
It separates it out.
It separates it out, which is the distinction, isn't it? You've got a shit sandwich, so you used to praise somebody, tell them they were rubbish, and then you'd praise them again, and they were completely confused, and then they'd go off to do the job, and they just carried on doing what they always did.
I still do love my funny joke with that, though, Debbie.
What is funny joke is that?
When someone wants to give you a shit sandwich, ask them, would they eat it?
Oh, right, okay. That's one of our child's comments. Anyway, so in regards to the three types of feedback... What are they and how do we use them?
Well, when we're coaching this in workshops, I like to draw a traffic light upside down. So the traffic light structure is the same. It looks the same, but the colours are upside down. Yep. So we understand what a red is because that's the one most people avoid. It gives us a specific way of dealing with conduct. Right? Bad attitude or conduct needs a two-minute intervention. And what happens is people spend no time actually doing it, and they spend all the time talking about doing it, right? And then time passes by and the conversation doesn't actually ever materialise. And the poor person who's being talked about never gets to know.
Mm.
And then it builds.
And then it builds and then that person becomes either good or bad or indifferent, but actually you've created, which actually goes back to your original point, is you conclude that person and they stay stuck in that perception that you've built because you as the leader, have never dealt with it. Brilliant. So what's it called, Dave?
It's called Abbott. A bit of a conversation.
Stop it in your book.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yes.
That's the technique.
That's
in my other book,
that
the framework.
That is in your other book, yes.
It's called Stop It. You know, when you think stop it, it's okay to say stop it, right? Don't do that. You know, and I always go back to the chewing the fat sketch from the BBC and the two guys living in the lighthouse and there's nothing to do and one of them always winds the other one up at night time and then he bugs them and he goes, Go done it, do that. And the boy goes, how? Just done it. And you know what he's really saying. I'm going to belt you. Right? Like, it's kind of like very clear. So stop it is just letting people know what just don't do that.
And we've got to be really clear about this. This is one thing. It's not a list of grievances that you've got about this individual. You are seeing and experiencing something, and I think the thing we didn't actually premise this with is you ask permission first.
You ask permission, and there's a couple of caveats to this, because I've seen this happen. Excuse me, everybody. Let's say you're in the sales game.
Yep.
And you're selling to a client, and it's a manager and a salesperson. I actually watched in research years ago, in that situation, a salesperson get something wrong and the manager let them, right? Rather than shoulder to shoulder, fix the situation live, work together, close the sale. No sale was made, commission only environment, mm-hmm. and the salesperson didn't earn any money. How open is that person going to be to feedback?
Yeah.
Zero.
Zero, yeah.
The manager in that case should have stepped in, leant on the shoulder and said, let's close this together. The business was there to be won. And they didn't. They thought the lesson was greater than the result. People learn better when they're winning.
Yeah.
Right? It's not always like that.
Yeah.
So at the same time, do it live, learn afterwards. And realize that sometimes you don't have time to practice. The practice is in the wrong moment. That was a bad time to practice. But the stop it is still the stop it.
I also think, though, as we're specifically talking about leadership and leadership, is that also what can happen is that the leader then takes over completely. Mm-hmm. Rather than standing side by side and helping, nudging and supporting
showing.
But yeah, but that's what happens. I think there's a crossover there. It can get lost. It's like there's many idioms, but I think it gets lost in, they then consume and take over. And actually, it's having the skill to be able to step back, look at the singular thing that needs help,
yeah.
help them, and then do your leadership, which is actually step and back and let the other
person
be.
There's no reason today to get these things wrong. So if you think about, I always think about people who work on computers and click as fast as a runner, right? It's and the younger generation coming through today who have been brought up with speed, apps and widgets. If you see them clicking tech software portals, they go like, I've never seen it like it, click, 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 like this. But where you're showing somebody in that scenario where maybe you're the expert on what you've been learning or you know it, and then the other person doesn't, use things like Scribe or Loom, record videos, process trackers, make it easier so you don't have to keep repeating. You can say, just watch the video after this, and then check back, coach, cajole, support, etc.
Okay, so let's go back to stop it. So stop it is
conduct
the moment.
Behavior.
Yeah, in the moment, one singular thing and then move on from that. So there's two more.
Stretch.
Yeah.
Stretch is
This is the amber light.
This is the amber light. Stretch is a incremental thing that if you work on it, will move everything forward. It isn't a small thing. It's usually, we often get lost with stretch as a list of stretches.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget to think, what's the macro of those stretches, the single thing? And then work on the big thing. The big thing usually fixes the rest.
And I think that's the difficulty, isn't it? Is that's normally the bigger conversation.
Yep.
So it's sometimes attitude, behaviour, mindset. It could lead into a personal conversation that you've got to bring and you've got to deal and nurture somebody. And I think that's why it gets avoided.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And remember here, sometimes it's hard. So humans will start doing something and will fade off relatively swiftly, mostly unintended, right? But when it becomes intended, you've got to call that out with a stop it. That's not okay. If your business stands for something and the person representing your brand doesn't do what your brand is, you've got to call that out there and then, because otherwise you're not what you say you are. And that's tough.
And I also think stretch connects back, because that's the whole idea of the book and what I've laid is, that when you're in stretch and stop it, you are specifically asking and supporting somebody as a leader to build new neural pathways, because that's actually what we're asking, and we're going to support them to do that. And we've got to connect the two together. This is big stuff, right? If we want people to be the better version of themselves in doing their job, so and doing it to the competency and role level that we expect as a leader, then we've got to also help these people, but we let people flounder.
Yeah, and leadership, Debbie, relies on mental elasticity.
It does, yes.
Right? Now, if you
I'm glad you said that word.
Yeah. If you were a musician and you had a stretch, the difficulty is you can hear it. It's really obvious to those that know.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I might not know. I might just think average is great. Mm. But for those that know, they'll hear it like a super sense.
Mm-hmm.
You can't avoid that because it's a sound. And leadership sometimes needs a sound. And what happens, because it's silent, the assumption is no one's checking, it's not really that important. It's more important than ever.
Yeah.
Stretch internally has to be the road to improvement.
You know, I always get these ping moments, even when we're talking like this, is all the things that I can continuously improve on and help myself with and therefore helping other people. And my brain's just got into a little fire mode of things that actually I could have done better yesterday on reflection. So let's go to the one that is the green light.
Oh, yeah. Soul food.
Yes.
Soul food is genius. It's the simplest
genius.
Thing in the world. And we've got Glenn McCoy to thank for that. I'm really glad that working with him, we were able to do this around. But I want to talk about the feeling behind it. The feeling of, if you imagine opening your favourite gift or you're going out for your favourite meal in your favourite restaurant, that special moment, that's the feeling you elicit with soul food, which is why, again, you ask for permission.
Yeah.
On all three of these, you ask for permission. But soul food uses its own navigation system, genuine, positive and specific.
GPS.
That's right. Soul food GPS, which means you can't just go thank you for today. That's not soul food.
Yeah.
That's manners.
Yeah.
Right. But it's taking a moment. I won't forget what happened recently on one of our podcast recordings for the next season, where we were at a conference in January meeting people in Dublin and we didn't know anyone, and we decided the impact we were going to make is we were going to give soul food out to people who made an effort or did something different.
Or impacted us.
Or impacted us directly. And we got to do that and see people who don't even know what soul food is receiving it like the best thing in the world. Because,
gorgeous.
And just to, for the listeners, we have soul food cards. So the card is nice on one side, and on the other side we write the soul food out.
It's a postcard.
It's a postcard size. Which means we've written it genuine, positive and specific. We sign it and then we ask them, can we give it to them? And they say yes. Then I read it to them and then I give it to them. So they get 3-time convincer by the time they read it of some really positive feedback. And it's on its own. It stands in isolation.
And what we've discovered with this is that people keep their soul food cards.
They do.
And the example you gave was we've even got a video where the person that we were joyfully able to get on the podcast actually has it next to their desk.
Yeah.
And this is not somebody who we work with, it's just somebody that we actually met. And the power of that is impactful. Two things. One is it's one thing, even though we're talking about genuine, positive and specific, we are being really clear about it's one tangible thing that person can connect to. It's not a list of this is all amazing, it becomes a bit sycophantic, it's really defined. And the other thing about permission is that sometimes people aren't ready. Pardon me. And being... I'll do it again.
Well, while you have a drink, Debbie, let me...
Can you just do the permission bit?
No. I'm going to give a bit of magic first. Okay? So I'll fill with my own thoughts, right? Is this. If you imagine going to a network event, introducing your business, you're taught all over the world to talk about the problem you solve, the solution you bring, and the feeling it overcomes, right? In soul food, the bit you often miss is it's the feeling that you're leaving on the card, right?
Yes.
Because you capture in the writing the feeling that you saw. And that's what we did in Ireland.
Yeah.
I wrote about the feelings that I saw.
Yes.
And that's the bit that connects the soul food up.
Yes.
Because soul food is a belief builder. That's the bit that's missing in the book, I think. It builds beliefs. If you want somebody to believe in better and that they can be better in your leadership selflessness, soul food is a real enabler.
Yeah. So I just want to be about the permission. So in regard to permission, somebody might say to you, no, they might genuinely say no. And what we coach is that's right now, again, selfish and selfless. We've got to understand the well-being and the point where that person is. So we just say, okay, right now might not be the time, but I'm going to, and I would like us to put some time aside so we can have this conversation.
Yeah.
You never avoid it and put it off.
Yeah.
Really important.
Yeah.
And another little bit of self-coaching there. So, two more things that I really want to wrap up, because there's your story, Dave. Now, if anybody does know Dave and I, firstly, a married couple, if you've only just stumbled across our podcast, but also Dave loves his cycling. He loves endurance racing and actually...
Okay, so why do I love cycling, Debbie?
Because for you, it allows you to be at your best. This is literally your, if you're going to put it into this chapter.
Anyone listening, there's a deeper reason. When I was younger, I had ME for years and I had no energy.
Yes.
I've also had multiple illnesses during my life, which have given me no option but to do nothing. And therefore, whilst I can, I do. And some days I can't. Right? So not through choice, though.
Yes.
Because of circumstances.
Yes.
So whilst I can, I do. And when I'm out cycling, I like to combine things. If you've heard this before, let's just reinforce it, which is, how do you do something you enjoy and put other things you enjoy into the same thing and stack them together? I do that when I cycle.
Okay, a question comes into my head and I'll pick that one on a different podcast. So in this in the cycle story that's in the Go Deeper, because mm-hmm. we don't put it straight into the chapter, we let you explore, you talk about an endurance race, which interestingly is in Mount Evans. Now, we're not going to do the we nearly got divorced story and all that kind of stuff. I really want to, because I think there's some, Dave's just knocked something over. The story is connected, and part of you doing some of the endurance stuff you do is it also gives you the opportunity to open up your mind to think about things as well.
Well, I'll talk about it in three spots.
Okay.
And then I know there's specifics in the book you can reference, yes. Debbie, right? So I'll talk about it in three spots. I attempted the Tour de Mont Blanc before riding Mount Evans, and in short, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. You know, I'll summarize it by one sentence. Anyone who does marathons, running, doesn't matter the distance you run or races that you do, you should all hopefully know, don't change your plans for the race the day, the day before race day. And I think everything that happened after that was all from that one single mistake. The mistake I made is I made about 12 mistakes.
And in itself is a leadership example.
Correct. When we got to the foot of Mount Evans and speaking at the Peyrevoort Conference altitude, and you and I talked about, or really I think I just told you what I wanted to do, and as always you supported me, which was I wanted to ride to altitude to speak about altitude.
Yep.
But I'd made all of the adjustments from the failure. I didn't make a single mistake that day again on that day. And I'd settled my commitment to the plan up front. Right. It was also the day of the solar eclipse, ironically.
It was, yeah.
And whilst America was getting ready to stop and stare at the sky.
With protected glasses
on, I decided to ride their highest paved road and just for the conference. And it was a really remarkable experience. During that process, I finalized how to apply mathematics to mindset through the fuel gauge theory.
Which is what I mentioned before.
But I had this moment on Mount Evans that perhaps we don't really talk about, which is 5 miles from the summit at one of the lakes, I think it's Echo Lake, if I remember, you pulled up because you'd had enough of the roads through a previous story. And you looked at me as if to say, I'm done. And
well, I
know you were done, but I didn't stop to check if that meant I should stop because you're done. I think I said something to you and I'll see you in about an hour and a half or 2 hours. And I remember riding off past you going, almost, shit, I just said to my wife, I'll see you in 2 hours. Followed by, now I am on my own. There's 5 miles and 14,500 feet to get to. What have I just decided?
But is that not a definition of two selfless moments? Selfless moment was, for my own well-being, I had to get her down that mountain.
You did,
it was not. And for you, it was the opposite. You had to finish what you'd started. So those are just really good examples.
I'd made the decision I was going. The plan was right. Because even at that point, despite this analogy in this moment in time, I had everything I needed. Because you'd helped me. You know, I think about that ride that day because we didn't have any altitude climatization. It's not as extreme as it sounds, but if you don't live at altitude, you know, that climb...
It's an odd feeling.
Yeah, that climb started at 7,500 feet and it goes up to 14,500 feet over 30 miles. And I'd been in town for a day and we live at sea level compared to that. So it was really quite hard. But I'd done my research. I'd asked people for expert advice around what would you do? Even those people that lived there who don't go up that high. So I was applying all of that. The car was full of everything I needed. The plans were set. So when we had that moment of, you know, an unexpected choice to be made, the decision for me to continue was actually quite easy. I'll never forget, though, the shock of turning around at the top, right? The last 2 miles were some of the hardest things I've ever done, where I was dizzy. I had to do it in thirds. I think it was thirds. It's distant memory these days. But I'll never forget that moment of going, I feel so drunk from the altitude. I feel nauseous. Stopping to stand over my bike frame, bike between my legs, eating a tiny sweetie, sipping some juice, and then moving again. Because if I did stop properly, it was over. And then the body movement experience was what kept me going. I didn't even stop at the top long enough to look, because I was at risk of being on my own. So I turned around. But the feeling was, oh my God, I'm so ill. How am I going to get down? And thanks to everybody at Mount Evans, there's nobody really there. The road was so bad with potholes and so scary. My brain's adrenaline took over on the way back to where you were. And that was enough to safely ride. And all that sickness temporarily, because of adrenaline, just went.
And I think one of the things that when you've written the book, is that there's loads of really great books out there. And there is, as you know, I'm a book fiend. But there's not normally a how. So there's not normally an output of it. It's a great explanation.
Yeah.
There might be something in it that I can connect with. But actually what you then sat down and worked out was, what are the things that I can, what you compared it to one that you'd done, so one that you'd failed at, which is really important. And then you looked at the things that you do successfully. And there was 4 points. There was one, always plan.
Yeah.
Make sure you've got a good plan, structure around it.
Especially when you've learnt before, Debbie.
Yep. So
take the moment to capture what that looks like.
And also understanding a plan can go awry.
Yep.
So knowing the what ifs as well. Asking the great questions, which you said, you actually went and sought out as much information as possible by asking great questions.
And I was, that day I had to ride at a lower cadence than I would normally.
Yep.
And I had to make sure that I stayed calm.
Then you set a date, so you were really clear about a start. And this is, I think, the biggest thing that we're learning at the minute is that people are brilliant at just talking about stuff.
Yeah.
Just do it. You know, even if you'd failed on that or you'd not got very far, the fact is you'd started doing something, because ultimately there's something else to get out of that. And then the final one is measure the progress. And that was about, you know, fortunately for you, you were doing a talk and there was an outcome that you were going to be able to share that story too. And ultimately it's been a part of this section too. So I think there's those 4 things. Plan, question, set a date if you're going to be doing something, and make sure you measure progress. Progress is not about succeeding or failure. It's the progress. That's it. Full stop. It's not got any of this other attachment to it.
And if you apply the last moment where you were at the car and I carried on to business, there are times in your business life that you will have to find out about something new when no one around you wants to go. Yeah. That doesn't mean don't go. It also doesn't mean when you do go, you have to do it either. But the only way you find out is to go and find out.
And do you know what's really interesting? In my head, I literally saw 2 feet, one in the stamp of selflessness and one in the
100%
selfish, because that's actually how you're making that decision from that point.
There were two people I must acknowledge who helped me with the preparation. Jessica Martin from Perivolt Marketing, and Perivolt, who spends all her time walking up there.
Okay.
And then the other one was Sean, who helped me a lot with his time of training in those spaces.
Okay, so that's great. So now as we're wrapping up the podcast, we always, and I think this is really important, ask you to do some self-coaching, some reflection on, you know, we have clearly stated throughout this, we all have examples of leadership and leadership.
Yep.
So one of the things that we do is we talk about at the end of each chapter is just to do some self-assessment and check, right, what am I doing right now that's leadership or leadership? And I wanted to just be really clear, because there were some really fundamental things that you put in there. So you talk about having your 8 of 8 list. And I know, if people didn't know, we do a monthly subscription called And Coaching. And in there, we do 3-minute D-logs. And one of those is Dave explaining what his 8 of 8 is. We've talked about fuel gauges. If you want to learn about that, we're going to do that in a different chapter. But you can also just contact us and let us know. You've talked about allowing people the time to recharge, refuel, and feed their leadership. So that self-investment of being, which we have to unlearn, I think. And also taking care of the well-being of you and your people. You know, there's an element of that is that selfish, selfless and selfish at the same time. They're literally partners as well. Give me some examples, Dave, just very quickly, of leadership. So people can really sit, they can see what the leadership and how you're going to help yourself and others. Give me some specific examples of leadership.
Measuring how committed somebody is for how long they're in the office.
Yeah. Oh, that drives me mad.
That's like a last century.
Yeah. It's,
you know, that's
very difficult to get out of, right? If that is where you've been and that's how you've been leading,
yeah,
you've got to accept now that is not.
And starting a sentence, why don't they?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. And then having a disappointment strategy about a person where you talk about them with a co-leader, but you never tell them.
Yeah.
Because people cannot improve on something they don't know about. And then the not taking care of yourself, because when you preach a story about being better at something, not doing it yourself is the fastest way to kill the initiative.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I've really enjoyed this chat, Dave.
So have I.
And also, can I please note, this is irrelevant to anybody else other than me and Davies. I actually didn't lose or get annoyed at you right at the beginning, which I normally do.
You didn't, yeah, absolutely
so
not.
See, this is about me being more selfish and getting myself in the right space. So thank you very much, Dave. We do have an up-and-coming guest on the next episode, so stay tuned. Released every single week as well. And they're going to be talking about what it means to them in theirs. And they're also in the book as well as an interview. So
and find out what's going on in their world a little bit.
Which is a really great way if we've been doing this tig and tag kind of.
So you're going to say tag your telly?
No, I'm not. That means you're hungry.
No.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening.
This has been Anne Double D. Thank you for spending this time with us and every success with your learning. Thank you for tuning in to Anne.DD. For ongoing inspiration, follow us at Anne.Scott on Instagram and online. Keep going, keep inspiring. Until our next episode.